Stand by. Your Steve Jones Show audio is loading now. SteveJonesShow.com podcasts are sponsored by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, the beverage supermarket.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street at Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Also, we're at the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors K Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And give us a call now, 1-800-795-9565 on the Lenape Solar Hotline, powered by Lenape Solar. Visit them online at lenapesolar.com. Now, are we on target when we talk about this lawsuit, or are we off base? That's at 1-800-795-9565. In case you missed it, LeBron James is a champion now.
Does this finally make it so that we can not talk about that anymore? That's kind of what I said earlier.
Exactly. He's a great player, has been a great player for a long time. He now has his championship.
I mean, I still don't, I don't like him leaving Cleveland the way he did. Just by making a big spectacle of it, but, you know.
Well, he grew up. You know that?
And that's what I hope, yeah.
He grew up. He handled the season completely different than he did last season. He wasn't cocky. He wasn't arrogant. He wasn't cantankerous. He just played basketball. Changed his game up a little bit. Wasn't so much of a jump shooter in the playoffs. Saw the openings. Took the ball to the hole, made plays. Had a great defensive playoff. And was deservedly the MVP of the championship. Look, let's talk about the plus of him. You know, when everybody was on John McEnroe's case back in the 80s, and I pointed this out several times at the moment, John McEnroe always played Davis Cup. He always played for the United States. And you don't get anything for playing in Davis Cup. He played because he thought it was the right thing to do to play for his country. LeBron James has played in 2 Olympics, 4 and 8, for his country.
Rumor has it he may play in the next one, too.
And it'd be great if he did, because right now he is the best player in the world at this moment. In 8, when they played at Beijing, he was not. I thought Kobe Bryant was. Kobe Bryant, to me, was the guy you absolutely had to have on that team. This team, though, you absolutely need to have LeBron James. He is playing the best basketball of his career.
Coach K said he should play.
Yes, he should play indeed. Now let's get to this story.
I've been waiting to hear this one.
You'll love this one.
I didn't hear this one earlier, so I'm good. I want to hear this.
Jose Manuel Lara was disqualified from the BMW International Open in Germany today after the Spaniard's flustered caddy attempted to hide having an extra club in his bag in the opening round. Realizing on the second hole that Lara was using 15 clubs, 14 is the maximum, for Thursday's round at the course in Germany, Argentine caddy Matthias Vincent tried to hide the extra club in some thick bushes. Lara thought the bagman had taken a diversion for a, quote, call of nature. But his playing partners, Damian McGrain and Peter Hedblom, became suspicious. Vincent then admitted to Lara that there actually were 15 clubs in the bag. John Paramore, the chief referee of the European Tour, told Lara he was disqualified from the $2.5 million tournament because a player is responsible for his caddy's actions. Vincent was banned from caddying indefinitely. The tour released a statement later today on all of this. The penalty of disqualification was imposed, with Paramore and tournament director David Williams believing a serious attempt to circumvent the rules was made by the caddy. Following an interview with Jose Manuel Lara, it was established that he had no prior knowledge of the 15th club in his bag or of the attempt to dispose of the 15th club. Lara shot a 3 under par 69 today. But with a 2-stroke penalty for each of the holes that he played with 15 clubs, he actually ended up at 1 over 73. Paramore said McGrain and Hedblom approached Vincent after he returned from the bushes. Quote, he was seen entering the bush with the bag of clubs by his playing partners, who thought seeing him with the bag going toward the bushes was a bit suspicious. They went and asked the chap, what are you doing? And he sort of fumbled around in answer, saying, I've got this wrong. I've done something bad. I wish it hadn't happened. It was clear the club was out of the bag and in the bush at the time. He admitted it straight away and regretted his action. Vincent had been caught. Now, here's the admirable part of this. Vincent had been caught in traffic on his way to the course in Germany, and he jogged the final 3 kilometers of the journey to make sure he got there in time before Lara teed off. In his haste, he failed to notice that Lara had 15 clubs in the bag. Lara had arrived at the course from his Dusseldorf hotel with only around an hour to spare before tee off. Paramore said, hopefully we won't have too many more incidents like these. He happened to be the tour referee at the time of a similar incident involving former Masters champion Ian Woosnam at the 2001 British Open. On that occasion, Woosnam was tied for the lead on the second hole of the fourth round at Royal Lytham in St. Anne's when he was informed by his caddy, Miles Byrne, that a spare driver had been left in the bag. Woosnam was given a 2-shot penalty, costing him a chance at his first British Open title, a first prize of £225,000, that's 350 large here, and a potential space on Europe's Ryder Cup. Meanwhile, Martin Keimer of Germany found himself in a quandary ahead of his second round after discovering his golf shoes had been stolen from the storage area. It's not the shoes I'm concerned about, but the specially made inserts I had in the shoes, the former world number one said. He shot an opening round 71. I've managed to get another pair of shoes, but we'll have to wait to get home tonight to fit in another pair of inserts. This is quite a tournament.
Sounds like security is a little lax.
Wait, this is quite a tournament. They're stealing shoes. They're throwing clubs into bushes. They're doing all sorts of things.
Well, let me ask you this question. Isn't somebody supposed to check the bag before they start, like an official, so this wouldn't have happened in the middle of the tournament?
I mean, no, you're responsible for your own.
You're responsible for your own. Okay.
Responsible for your own bag.
There's like no pre-round inspection.
Right. And okay. The reason that Lara is disqualified is because ultimately, as the player, he is actually responsible for his caddy's actions and also responsible for how many clubs are in the bag.
And I get that, and I agree with that. But what now? Didn't you say there was a ban for life in this?
No.
Okay, I thought I heard.
I just said he's suspended indefinitely.
Suspended indefinitely.
He's banned
okay.
from caddying indefinitely, the tour said.
Okay. For one incident where he tried to hide it and then came out and said, yes, I did. Okay, I don't know if that's an indefinite suspension. It definitely should have a fine as suspension because it is a violation of the rules.
I'd suspend him for a month.
But I don't know that an indefinite suspension is warranted here.
Exactly. Look, although the fact that he tried to dispose of the club in a bush.
Well, and I think that's probably why you're hearing it. You're hearing the indefinite suspension.
Yes. Well, too bad it was in a lake. Bloop.
They never would have found it until they started to scan for golf balls.
No, they'd have seen him throw it in there.
It would have been one of those things I remember losing a club on this course last year. Now it's in the clubhouse under rummage clubs.
I know. He tried to dispose of it in the bush. What are you doing down there with the bag? I mean, even the player has to sit back and be suspicious when a guy says to him, he says, a call to nature, and like he takes the bag with him. I can stand with the bag while you go.
Listen, don't take the bag, all right? Leave the bag. I don't know what you're doing, but I don't want my golf clubs near it.
Right, exactly. Our number, 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. Heat won last night. The Phillies, you've given up.
Nah. It's not June 30th yet.
They play Tampa Bay tonight, and pitching matchup tonight is going to be.
Is it Lee?
James Shields and Cliff Lee.
Yeah.
Lee's ERA skyrocketing to 3.48.
You know, I'm waiting for the Sunday matchup with Dickey throwing for the Mets against the Yankees. That should be interesting. He's thrown what, 40, almost 43 innings without an earned run.
Yeah, he's only 16 away from tying Orel Hershiser. And meanwhile, Mets reliever Frank Francisco has called the Yankees chickens.
Why?
He showed no fear in taking a swipe at the Bronx counterparts, calling the Yankees chickens on the eve of the weekend matchup. I can't wait to strike out those chickens. I want to strike out the side against them. I've done it before. Francisco offered no elaboration on the swipe, then told the newspaper, I think I've said too much already. Really?
Do you think?
The comment was rather odd. There was no apparent animosity with the Yankees when they slugged 8 home runs in the 3-game series against the Mets of the Bronx 2 weekends ago. On Friday, Francisco said he wasn't aware of the stir he created until he arrived at Citi Field. His teammates greeted him with a rendition of the chicken dance. Francisco then found a copy of the New York Post with a photoshopped cover image of Derek Jeter's head on a chicken on his locker chair. Francisco said he was not trying to ruffle feathers, but adds that the Yankees complain too much. I made a simple comment just to say they complain a lot for every call, for everything, he said. I thought it was funny. I didn't expect it to be a big deal. Francisco doesn't have much to chirp about him this season. He's narrowly converted his 17th save Wednesday as the Mets swept the Orioles, loading the bases, then walking a run in before preserving a 4-3 win. I mean, you can't give a guy a save for that. You can't.
Yeah, I know
under the rules you have to, but doesn't common sense and logic dictate that if it's 4-2 and the dude loads the bases and he walks a run in, the only thing he's saving now is himself, not saving the game.
I mean, add another stat for it. Call it survival, not a save. Just a survive.
I wouldn't give him anything. I wouldn't give him a save. I'd be like, you didn't save anything. You almost cost him the game. 1-800-795-9565. 1-800-795-9565 on the Lenape Solar Hotline.
Love to hear
from you, by the way.
You know how I've been having issues with the All-Star voting? There's a week left. Get this.
There's between you and me.
There's a week. I know. You don't care. I know.
I have no issue with the All-Star voting. I don't care who plays.
But there's a week left, and Ryan Howard has 677,000 votes. He has not played an out. How can he have 677,368 votes to play first base?
How?
Yes.
People voted for him.
Why? No, that's not the answer. And then, of course, the other thing is that Carlos Ruiz is still a distant third, like 700,000 behind Buster Posey in first. I don't get that.
I think Buster Posey's had a pretty good year.
I'm not saying he hasn't. I just don't think Carlos Ruiz should be 700,000 votes behind. Yadier Molina is second.
You're all worked up. I mean, I used to get that way, too, a long time ago. But as the All-Star game has faded and faded and faded over the years, I barely even watch the game anymore.
But this is why. Andrew McCutchen has only got 1,000,001 in the outfield.
I know.
Why?
He should have a lot more than that.
That's my problem with the All-Star game. If we're going to let the fans vote, that's fine. I think it should be the fans voting. But should the fans vote hold everything? No, it should have one third of the votes needed should come from popular vote, I'll call it, because that's what it is. Throw the other third in for the managers, then the other third should be players. Then your All-Star game actually is an All-Star game, and it would be worth watching and not just a popularity contest, which is what it is. And that's probably why you don't care.
No, the night they tied in Milwaukee and they were running in guys left and right, I was like, I don't want to watch this anymore.
Well, the night they tied and made it a tie is the time that I lost all faith in baseball, period.
Yeah.
I don't care how many pitchers you have left.
They looked confused. They looked impotent. It was not good. It was not good.
And I still think you should. And I know we've had this discussion before. I still think you should be allowed to put a pitcher in that instance again if you've gone through all your pitchers just to continue the game. Because you want to get everybody in the game that had a chance to be there.
You can't do that, Kevin. You can't do that.
I know the injury thing. I get that. But there's got to be something.
It's an exhibition game. I mean, if I'm a pitcher and a manager in the All-Star game, an exhibition game, ask me to go back in the game, I would say no, because I owe my team that pays my salary, okay, to not go back in.
Then how do you feel about the World Baseball Classic in the spring?
I would play in it to play for my country.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm saying if you were a player, manager, fan, how would you view that particular game or series of games, I should say?
Well, if I'm a player, I'm playing for my country.
Sure, I get that.
I mean, to me, it's the Olympic Games. I mean, we have an opportunity to play for your country the way, for example, this is the 40th year anniversary of Team Canada and the Soviet Union. The NHL professionals finally playing for the first time on this stage against the Soviet Union, right? That's what the equivalent of the World Baseball Classic is. I put the uniform on for my country. If I'm playing in, and I know it's exhibitions.
Right.
But if I'm playing in the All-Star game and they ask me to pitch, I pitch. If I am not done for the night and the whole thing and they ask me to come back and pitch again, no. For one thing, I've never done it before in my life.
And well, you might have done it in the Little League.
Yeah, but no. Nobody comes back and pitches again in Little League.
Oh, you can do it. It's not done often, but you can. It's not done often, though.
I mean, I'm done. Okay? I've done my part, and guess what? My team that pays my salary would be furious if I did this. And justifiably so. What are you doing? What are you going back out there? It's not your normal routine. That's not, you're not stretched out. You're not, you know, there's a whole bunch of this. There's no way you could do that. It's a worthless exhibition. I don't care about this home field and the World Series stuff. This is jazzing up the exhibition.
I don't know. I mean, I would think there's got to be some solution to the incident a few years ago, the game not ending in a tie and running out of pitchers and all. And I understand your point of not bringing a pitcher back into the ball game.
You can't.
I understand. I didn't necessarily agree, but you have convinced me. But there's got to be some solution to make this game worth watching. And not because of home field advantage. If you're the San Diego Padres or the Colorado Rockies, are you really worried about home field advantage in the World Series? No, you're worried about making the wild card or the playoff or winning the division. So what can you do to the All-Star game to make it worth watching?
Well, what gets me, though, is that there's going to be a play where, let me give you an example. I'm trying to think which player it was. It was, guys, a really good third baseman for the Rangers at one point. Bullock. Right? Bullock. Mike
okay.
Bullock. Mike
right.
Bullock. Homered off Eric Gagne. I think that was his name. Homered off Eric Gagne in the All-Star game. And won it. Gagne had gone through that scoreless streak, he's awesome, incredible. Well, in the middle of that scoreless streak, he gave up this home run in the All-Star game, which, of course, doesn't count.
Statistically, right?
Right, statistically doesn't count. So he'd gone through all these appearances where he gave up nothing, right? And it was 2004. And because of that home run, the Red Sox got home field advantage, and I was able to go to game two of the World Series because of this home run.
Win for you.
Yeah, but you have a Los Angeles Dodger and a Texas Ranger determining who was in the All-Star game.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's very true.
All right, and the Dodgers, let's see, where is it here? I'll find it. It was at Minute Maid Park. I think.
And all these guys opting out of the Home Run Derby. To me, right now, that's the most exciting thing about All-Star Week.
I would tell any player on my team they were not allowed to participate in the Home Run Derby.
And I understand that. I've seen what it does to swings, and being a Phillies fan, Ryan Howard, I saw what it did to his swing a few years ago. But
Hank Blaylock was the guy that did it. Hank Blaylock is the guy that hit. Okay. All-Star game, blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, he was the one that hit the home run off Gagne. I mean, you have the World Series determined by Hank Blaylock. No offense to him. But just saying, Home Run Derby, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, he hit it off Eric Gagne. You have to be kidding me. I mean, that's who determines? You mentioned the Rockies and the Padres. Right. You may have a San Diego Padre,
right,
but the worst record in baseball, determining who the all. I mean, you run out some relief pitcher from the Padres, and he gives up four runs, and you lose it.
Right, and all of a sudden it's all done. Yeah, and it's changed the October schedule completely, and it may cost the National League team the World Series because of it, because of having home field advantage making a difference. And that's right, stretching a little bit. I realize that.
Today's show being brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, Beverage Supermarket. We'll come back, final half hour of the show. What are you laughing about? Why are you so happy it's the final half hour? You've barely been here this week.
That's probably why.
Here
I'm
on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's broadcast extravaganza being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket, 1-800-795-9565. That's our Lenape Solar Hotline. Powered by Lenape Solar. Visit them online at lenapesolar.com. In the beautiful Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And the Phillies headed to Roy Oswalt pitches tonight. The Heat won the championship last night at 5. Meanwhile, in soccer today, at the Germany beat Greece 4-2.
Yay.
In the quarterfinals, well, there we have some soccer fans out there.
Yeah, if it was soccer fans, I think a lot of the soccer fans would be interested if the United States was involved.
It's European championships, I can't be.
I realize that. Captain Obvious.
Unless something has changed I don't know about.
I understand that.
Arkansas and South Carolina tonight in the semifinals of the College World Series. In golf, I know you love golf.
I do. I love golf.
In golf, let's see, where are they playing this week? The Travelers in Hartford? Yeah. Usually that yields a lower score. Yeah, I give them credit. Travelers Championship is in Cromwell, the TPC course. And Frederick Jakobsen leads at 9 under par through two rounds. He shot at 66 today. Par, by the way, is 70. Nathan Green is at 8 under along with Charlie Hoffman. Blake Adams, who played very well at the U.S. Open, at 7. Roland Thatcher is 7. Stuart Appleby is 7. Webb Simpson, the U.S. Open champ, is playing. He's 5 under par through 36 holes. So those guys are done. I went to the Travelers Championship a few years ago, and I followed certain guys around. It was, you know, kind of a lean field, but, I watched, I remember Davis Love III was in it, so I followed him for a couple holes. There were a couple of guys along the way. And I remember that Tommy Aaron III put a ball into a bush on 10. And you know what? And you know what happened when he went to the bush? I was standing right there on 10.
No, what happened?
He found Jose Manuel Lara's golf club. No,
somehow knew that was coming.
Set up, but he puts the ball into a bush. And I'm thinking to myself, and it took him several minutes to figure out what he wanted to do, why he wanted to do it, the whole thing. He's right-handed, so he at least had a stance based on where the ball was. And he hits that ball, and he slices it out of there, and it rolls up on the green 20 feet from the hole. I mean, that's why when people say, that guy stinks, no, they don't. They may not be as good as that guy, but they're still good. That's Tommy Aaron III. There's no way you and I could even conceive hitting this shot.
Especially me.
I mean, when you're talking, there are 1,000 professional golfers in the world. 160 are on this particular tour. There are 7 billion people in the world. That's why when people say, hey, stinks, I always sit back and say, no, they don't stink. They're just not as good as that person.
I'm just happy that I'm in the top billion golfers.
I didn't say how many people play golf.
Well, it's got 7 billion. There's got to be at least a billion.
So then I get to 18. I get to 18, right? And we hang at 18 there on the hill. Jeff Maggart, who's had a pretty good career in his own right, is leading the tournament. Now, everybody had basically done the same thing that we watched. I probably watched 7 or 8 groups come into 18, the final 7 or 8 groups. I'm parked there on the hill. Everybody, there's a bunker on the right-hand side. Everybody hit it to the left of the bunker. Boom, everybody brought it into the green to a certain spot. Left of the bunker, green, certain spot. I mean, everybody. It's amazing seeing virtually identical shots. Maggart finally gets there. Maggart takes the ball, and he's the only guy that drives it into the bunker. Okay. Then he comes out of the bunker, and he's the only guy to put it in the bunker around the green. Then he chips out of the bunker, but he runs it 40 feet past, and then he takes the putt for par, runs it like 2-3 feet past, and then he goes in and runs in the putt for bogey, loses the tournament. Now, the other guy is still there to putt. Maggart takes the ball out, and Maggart walks off the green. The other guy hasn't putted yet. He walks, he goes stomping up the hill off the green, and then as the other guy's over the ball, you hear bang! There was a metal flooring in the scoring tent, and Maggart took his putter and drove it into it when this guy's trying to putt. I couldn't believe it.
That might have been distracting.
It was, and I understand that the moment could be tough. It was in person, the greatest show of a lack of sportsmanship I've ever seen.
Was he suspended indefinitely?
Nothing happened to him.
There you go. Proves my point.
Ridiculous. I saw that. I mean, I was sitting right there. I saw it. I saw him do it.
That's crazy.
It's unconscionable. So that was at the Travelers Championship. Major League Baseball coming up tonight. Phillies are back in action with Tampa Bay. This is Cliff Lee and James Shields tonight.
Joe Maddon's returned to Pennsylvania.
Yes, very good manager.
Hazleton native.
Doesn't know how to handle the pine tar thing, but that's good. Cheating's cheating.
Cheating's cheating.
And then the Pirates are back in action tonight as well. They're playing Detroit.
Where's that game being played?
games at PNC because they already played at Comerica. It's Pfister against A.J. Burnett. And you know what? A.J. Burnett's had himself a fine season. He's 7-2 with a 3.52 ERA. Other games tonight look like this in the majors. It's all interleague play again. Washington's at Baltimore. Atlanta at Fenway against the Red Sox. Minnesota's at Cincinnati. The Yankees are at the Mets. Toronto's at Miami. Colorado at Texas. Cleveland and Houston. Milwaukee at the White Sox. St. Louis at Kansas City. Cubs are at Arizona. And the you know you have to have one National League game. Dodgers are at Anaheim against the Angels. San Francisco at Oakland. Seattle's at San Diego. So it's rivalry time. It's rivalry time. That's why, for example, the Braves are playing at Boston. Why? Because that's where the Braves franchise started, Boston. I was talking to Patrick Chambers about this and Ross Condon, the director of basketball operations the other day, about Nickerson Field. They go, yeah, that place, that used to be Braves Field. I said, that's where the Boston Braves played until 1954. They're like, you're kidding me. I said, no. They play soccer there now because BU doesn't have football now. Now BU's going to the Patriot League. A story which we broke in the show.
Everything but hockey.
Yes, you were shocked.
I was.
And I can tell you right now, they're not leaving hockey.
No, no.
Ever tell you that
story? No, they'd win the Patriot League every year, I'll say that.
Did I ever tell you a story about hockey?
I don't think so.
1984.
Picture this, 1984.
All right, did I tell you the Marcus Allen story yesterday?
Yes, you did.
Well, this is part of the Marcus Allen story. I never told you this part. Penn State's playing Boston University in Walter Brown Arena. Now, BU has its own separate arena now, okay? Harry Aganis Arena. So when Bucknell goes to play up there, they're going to play at Aganis Arena. But they used to play in Walter Brown Arena. Walter Brown, named for the old Celtics owner. So we're on the air at 8 o'clock. The game is at 8 o'clock. We're on the air at 7:30. So I pull into Walter Brown Arena at 6:30. I have all the equipment. I'm going to set it up. This is back in the days where I had to really run everything myself.
Where you actually had to do something besides walk in the booth.
Yes, exactly. So I walk in, and the Boston University hockey team is out there. I thought to myself, I'm confused here for a moment. So I found the sports information person. I said, I must be in the wrong part of the building. I said, there's a basketball game tonight. I said, which part of the building do I go to for that? He goes, oh, no, we're going to play right here. I said, we're going to play right here. I said, but they're practicing hockey. He says, and he points up to the Raptors. He says, hey, babe, here at BU, that pays the freight. There are three national championship banners up there.
We'll drop the boards later.
Right. So I still have to set up. So I set up in the penalty box.
And they finally, ironic, isn't it?
I know. And they finally stop hockey practice. You have to remember now, they have to assemble the court. They don't just like hockey practice over, okay, play basketball. They had to assemble the court. I'm sitting there, you're thinking, you got to be kidding me. So I start at 7:30, right? They finally finished assembling the court. It's supposed to be an 8 o'clock tip-off. They finally tipped the game off at 8:42. How about that one?
That makes it a really entertaining pregame show.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't beat the time, though, that you did a 3-hour pregame show waiting for the officials to make their way, driving from Philadelphia to State College?
I know. That was the Wisconsin
basketball
game.
That was the best one. That was the best.
Wisconsin basketball game waiting for the officials to get there.
Even you ran out of stuff to talk about in that pregame.
I actually had 2 halftime interviews, and I played them both in the pregame show. Because you're trying to find something. And, you know, stuff happens. Stuff happens.
It was really interesting, though, to interview the ball boy and hear the janitor's thoughts on, you know, how things are running in the Bryce Jordan
Center. I just talk about state of college basketball, things we'd like to change and so forth, you know. We talked about things like that. I mean, there's still certain things I'd like to change about it, about the game. One is you don't need a five-second call. Five-second call is completely unnecessary in college basketball. Totally. Why? There's a 35-second shot clock. Why do you need a five-second closely guarded call that's a judgment call? Right?
I agree.
You don't?
I agree wholeheartedly.
Also, a video review, goaltending where it hits the backboard, should be a reviewable play. Because that one you can tell. Flight of the ball, you can't. But off the backboard, you can. Also, they should use video replays to who the ball went off of out of bounds in the final 5 minutes of a game.
The only change I'd like to see in high school, and I've discussed both sides of it, I would like to see a 45-second clock in high school.
Yeah, there should be a shot clock.
I mean, it doesn't have to be short, but something.
College basketball was 45 seconds and then rolled back to 35. The women have always been 30. The women have always been 30. They have never changed. That. They've always been 30, but there was no backcourt either. There's no backcourt in women's basketball.
I just don't think if you have a 45-second clock, you're going to have a whole lot of issue with that clock running out and a shot clock violation. I think you might. It will stop teams from stalling toward the halftime and at the end of the game.
No doubt.
I don't think it'll affect anything else in the game. But
you also have to spend money on new clocks.
Right. That is the big point.
That's the issue.
That makes the difference. Absolutely
the
right.
It's a budget issue.
I know how much it costs when the PIAA, I don't know that they made it mandatory, but they recommended you have a play clock in football. And I know the expense that went to put play clocks in everywhere.
Right. So, I would do that in basketball. Take out the 5 second closely guarded. I just don't think that there's a 35-second shot clock. Who cares? It's one less thing for the officials to worry about. They have enough to worry about. And I'd use video replay in the final 5 minutes of a game to determine out of bounds on a tip ball. And I would use video replay to determine goaltending if the ball hits the backboard.
I'd almost like to get rid of the possession arrow.
Well, that was done, but that's done for the benefit of the officials.
I know.
The officials felt that they could not properly toss the ball in the air.
I think that's an unfair advantage, especially late in a ball game. I think that's an unfair advantage to a team to have the possession arrow in their favor.
Yeah. But that was done for the officials. That's the only reason that rule's still in there. Our number 1-800-795-9565. Let It Be Solar Hotline, powered by Let It Be Solar. And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sudbury, the beverage supermarket. We'll continue with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury has all your summer partying needs. They have beer, they have snacks, they have soda, they have water. And did I mention they have beer? Brewers Outlet has a huge selection of imports and microbrews, some incredible deals, and they're a great beverage shoppable store. Fresh roasted peanuts daily, and check this out, a new Help Yourself Pickle Bar. Brewers Outlet, the beverage supermarket, Sunbury wants you to enjoy the summer, and don't forget the beer.
Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. That's right. It's the weekend and time for the beverage supermarket. Phone line powered by Lenape Solar. And on that Lenape Solar hotline today, we had quarterback Matt Boyne. Go to stevejonesshow.com podcast time. And you'll be able to relive that interview.
You'll also be able to relive the diatribe that we had in the first 20 minutes of the program.
How do you sue an 11-year-old?
I don't know.
You can't get blood from a stone. I mean, really. Well, the parents are sitting there saying, what are you doing?
Well, how's he going to pay it? If he does get through it, how's he going to pay it?
No, it's the parents that
I know. I know. I didn't even know you could sue somebody under the age of 18.
Unless they could prove it was malicious. I just can't imagine the 11-year-old having any malice toward this woman sitting at a picnic table. And it's just back with the other kid going, hey, I'm going to nail her. Now, if that's the case, if that were the case, she'd be absolutely entitled.
Maybe
if
she was heckling.
If that turned out to be the case. Sounds like she was minding her own business. But
I would sound that way, too. Yeah, that doesn't make
it
any sense.
It's just mind-boggling. We don't have all the facts in this, but just the basic knowledge that it's an 11-year-old in the bullpen throwing the ball back and forth with the pitcher. You know, what do you want him to do? Right? Are you supposed to not warm up? You move. Show some common sense. Get out of the play of the ball. So you have no common sense. You get hit by the ball, you sue.
All right, the weekend is coming. There's going to be a lot of youth baseball going on, Little League tournaments and youth baseball leagues. Here's my suggestion to fans and parents. Sit in the stands and watch the game, because if you're talking to the person next to you or on the phone or texting or tweeting and a ball comes in your direction and somebody yells heads up, means you better watch out.
Exactly. And if they're warming up in the bullpen,
don't stand behind it. That's right. Don't stand behind it. Don't stand around it. Don't stand inside of it either.
Right. I'm just completely taken aback by this one. Again, do we feel complete sympathy for the fact she broke her orbital bone?
Sure.
Yes. Do we find complete sympathy for her because she's had trouble with her insurance company?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Do we find complete sympathy with the fact that she had to go through pain and suffering?
Horrible.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that must have been horrible.
Right. But it's an accident from an 11-year-old. He didn't deliberately do it to her. That's when you can sue, is if when somebody deliberately does something to injure you.
Well, I got something you can wrap up the week with. Are you ready for this? This is going to excite
11.
You. This is going to excite you, so get ready. Jeff Kent is rumored to be on Survivor coming in September on CBS.
Oh, I thought you were quitting. All right.
I said excite you, not make you ecstatic.
Jeff Kent.
Yeah. He would be the third major sports personality, we'll call it, to be on the show.
Well, Jimmie Johnson was one.
No, the fourth then. I'm sorry, because I forgot about Jimmie Johnson. Holger Boom was the other one.
Okay.
And Steve Wright, NFL tackle.
Yeah, played for the Packers and the Cowboys.
Now you're going to watch the show, aren't you?
No.
No.
I was never a big Kent follower when he played. I know he hit the big home run in game six of the National League Championship Series against the Cardinals.
I'll take your word
for it. All right, we'll talk to you Monday.